For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Thursday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where we post all of our new content, podcasts, articles, news and notes, polls. Everything that we post out baseball-related can be found at that account. That's EthosFantasyBB. And if you're not somebody who does use social media, that is the quickest way to get our stuff if you follow on social media. But if you're on the website as well, sportsethos.com, you'll get everything there right from the source. Guys, we are going to be talking about Wednesday's slate of games and then getting into the most added and dropped players of the day. Before we get into that, though, I wanted to say if you're somebody who's new to the show, I really appreciate you guys finding us. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please do consider leaving a rating and review. It really does help the show to grow. It just takes a couple seconds. Obviously, it doesn't cost anything. You just scroll down to the bottom of your podcasting app, whatever it is, Apple or Spotify or Google, whatever it is, hit that five-star button. It makes me very, very, very happy. And of course, we do find new viewers in that way as well. And this is a great time to be finding new viewers in April. A lot of people are finding baseball podcasts for the first time. So that is very much appreciated. But let's start digging into the players. Tanner Houck is definitely at the top of the list of players we got to be talking about today. He threw a complete game shutout against Cleveland last night. He's looked really, really good to start 2024. The one shaky start against the Angels aside, everything else has been beautiful. But last night, 9 strikeouts, did not walk a batter, 38% CSW, and a 20% swinging strike rate. Actually, 20.2% swinging strike rate. His season line is absolutely gorgeous. 26 2/3 innings pitched, 4 earned runs that all came in that one start against the Angels, 28 strikeouts, and only 2 walks. He's been incredible, and it's not even something where you can look at like, oh, well, he's been incredibly lucky, and the BABIP is really low, and he's stranding all these base runners. No, his BABIP is 292, which is right in line. Like, I mean, his career BABIP is 293, not a massive sample size, but he's doing what he's been doing his whole career there over about 300 innings. So it's not fully, I mean, I can still move around a little bit, but generally he's about a 300 BABIP guy. 292 is nothing to say like, oh, this is due for massive regression. He's not going to sustain that. No, that's probably going to stay right where it is. He's stranding 77% of base runners. League average is about 72, 73, and his career number is 71.5. So maybe it comes down a slight touch, couple percent, but that's not anything that's going to drastically change what we've seen so far from these performances out of him. He's got a 1.35 ERA, which I don't think anybody in their right mind expects that to stick. But if you look at the supporting metrics, those ERA estimators, a 2.61 xFIP, a 2.04 FIP, 2.89 xERA, and his Sierra sits at 2.64. All of those are fantastic. And then you look at strikeout minus walk rate, which I've mentioned quite a few times is probably my favorite thing to look at. 26.7% on the strikeout rate, which is excellent. And he's only walking less than 2% of batters. Now, that's not going to stick to that extent. He's not going to walk 2% of batters because nobody does that. George Kirby doesn't even do that. But he's been like an 8 to 9% guy for his career. If he can even be about a 6, 7% guy, which is where he's trending, you know, when you go 4 starts of the year and you only walk 2 batters, it does lead you to believe that maybe there is something that he's kind of figured out there. He walked 2 batters against the Angels. That wasn't the start where he gave up the 4 runs. He faced the Angels twice. This one was the previous outing where he allowed 2 walks and 4 hits, but it was 6 innings of shutout ball. Those are the only 2 walks he's allowed all year. Yes, he's obviously going to walk more batters, but I think that's something where he might have figured it out to some extent, and he's probably going to be like a 6 or 7% guy. It's not a drastic change, but you're letting fewer guys on base. It's obviously a good thing. And the strikeout rate, you know, in his first couple of seasons, which were very small sample sizes, the first one is not even really worth talking about in 2020. It was just 3 starts, but 2021, he had that massive strikeout rate of 30.5%. The last couple of years, we haven't really seen it, 22.7 and 21.4 respectively, but he's shown us that the strikeout upside is within him. So I think he can probably maintain about a 26% strikeout rate, 26, 27%, which is about 3% above league average. That's really, really good. I'm pretty much fully bought in at this point on Tanner Houck. Not 100%, because there is something troubling still about having half of your starts at Fenway. Fenway is a terrible park to pitch in. It's about the third most. You know, we always talk about Coors Field and Great American Ballpark as the two really, truly, you know, batter-friendly parks. There are others, but those are the main ones. Fenway is right behind them at number three if you look at park factors over several years. It's a tricky park to pitch in. A lot of pitchers don't like it, even just from a mental standpoint. You know, when we did that show in January or early February with Eno Saris and Nick Pollock, Eno talked about how he had interviewed a few Red Sox pitchers, and they hate pitching at Fenway because of the optics, the way that the mound looks. Like, there's certain things there. It's not fully standard. We all know this. Ballparks are not standard. There's different dimensions. There's different things that can be in the background, different amount of foul territory or whatever. Pitchers do not like pitching in Boston, and generally speaking, if you look at their splits home and away, they're a lot better away from Fenway. Cutter Crawford was the big example last year. He had a 6 ERA at home and a 2.50 ERA on the road. You'll see a lot of that with Boston. So there might be some starts at Fenway where you're more hesitant to put Houck in your lineup. But I think most of the time, you're going to be pretty okay with it, especially if he continues at this trajectory. You might not start him against maybe 5 or 7 teams at home, but I think a lot of the time Tanner Houck is going to be a pretty, pretty exceptional start if he keeps this up. He's only 72% rostered on Yahoo. I think most competitive formats he's already scooped up. But if you're still seeing him sitting there in your league, I think that he is somebody that should be picked up, absolutely. I think about a 20% strikeout minus walk rate, about a 3.50 ERA and a 1.20 whip should be coming in here for Tanner Houck. That would be my rough expectations. Again, projections. I did projections all offseason. I'm not going to be doing them in season because that would just be, you know, I wouldn't have any hair left on my head by the end of it. But I think Tanner Houck is about a 3.5 ERA, 1.2 whip kind of guy with good strikeout numbers and decent enough team context. I think Boston's pretty good. It's a very tough division, but should be able to come away with double-digit victories for you. Hell, he's already got 3 of them in his first 4 starts, so I don't think double-digit victories should be terribly hard to attain for Houck. I really like him. I'd pick him up where you can find him. Let's talk about Michael King. I really don't know what to make of Michael King. He'll have a terrible, awful start, and then he'll have a start like this, where he goes 7 2/3. He flirted with a no-hitter. He brought a no-hitter into the 7th inning, I believe. Or maybe I think it was into the 7th he took the no-hitter. 2 hits, 1 earned run, struck out 10, walked 2 batters, 39% CSW, and a 15.5% swinging strike rate. He looked great, but my concerns with him are still there. The command is a little bit shaky. 15 walks in 27 innings. Now, he did have that one start that was just hilariously bad where he walked 7 batters, which is obviously going to inflate that a little bit, but we can't ignore it. Like, it's still there. He still walked 7 batters. We've still seen the command kind of be shitty, and it's something that, you know, it's something that I worry about. The other part that I really, really worry about is, and this is even bigger concern, honestly, is the workload. Michael King has never thrown more than 104 innings in a season. Is he now going to be able to throw 150, 160? There are some projections that have him out there throwing 168 innings. I think that's absolutely ludicrous. There's nothing to suggest that he's going to get anywhere close to that. I think that the Padres are likely to baby him in the middle of the season towards the second half of the year. And this is the thing, like, we are getting these stats now, and it doesn't matter in a roto league what a guy, like, if he does it for you in June, in August, in April, it doesn't matter. But for head-to-head leagues, a lot of these starting pitchers, a lot of these relievers converted to starters, unless the team has really managed them correctly, they're probably going to get to a point where those last couple weeks of the season, you're not actually using them for your head-to-head playoffs. And I know, you know, I talk about roto a lot. It's my preferred format, but a lot of people play head-to-head, and that is a massive thing that you got to worry about. Is there going to be anything left in the tank come the last 2 weeks of September when all the money is on the line in my head-to-head league? I think Michael King is a guy where they'll probably get to about 130 innings, and they'll say, okay, like, that's probably about enough. We've increased about 30 innings from last year. They don't want to push him like crazy, I don't think. I mean, they've got a couple years of team control. He's arbitration eligible. He's a free agent after 2026. He's only 28 years old right now. I don't know that they're going to say, all right, Michael King, you're throwing 200 innings this year, whatever happens. Like, I think they're going to be very, very careful with him. So I think that we're going to get to a point where they start to limit his innings. Maybe there's a potential IL stint that's not really a real IL stint, just so they can skip a couple starts. Maybe he goes into a long relief role in the bullpen. I just think that there are a lot of situations where Michael King is not an effective starter for you over the second half of the season, specifically over that last month. And I do worry about what that's going to cost you in a head-to-head league. You spent a pretty decent price on Michael King this year. If he's not there and come the most important time of the year, then that's something I definitely will worry about. And that goes to not just Michael King. That goes to a lot of these relievers converted to starters. I mean, I've talked about it with Ronaldo Lopez yesterday. Garrett Crochet is another one. I mean, A.J. Puck, Jordan Hicks. There's all of these guys, really. They don't have a long history of throwing massive amount of innings. Most of them are usually in the 60 to 70 kind of inning range. So I don't think we're necessarily going to see a massive jump from any of them. Michael King, you know, when you combine those command issues, and they haven't always been big command issues. He's usually been pretty okay, but it's been a big struggle for him so far as a starter. 13.2% walk rate is brutal. It's influenced by the one bad start, sure, but it's still something we got to look at. So when you put in all those factors together, I think if you can try and capitalize on the start that Michael King had yesterday, and I'm not saying, like, you know, you'll be able to get a King's ransom for him. But if you're, I actually did not even mean that as the pun. That was really bad, but that was completely unintentional. If you're able to get something for him, maybe you put him in a 2-for-1 trade, or you trade him and just get out a couple rounds of value. This is what I've said this a lot, and forgive me if you've heard it already, but I'm going to say it again. The buy low and sell high and the mentality that everybody has is usually very wrong. You're thinking, okay, guy has a great start. I'm selling him for a first rounder. Let's go. Yordan Alvarez, come to my team now because I had, I don't know, Martin Perez have a great start. Like, people have very skewed views of what trading looks like in fantasy. You drafted Michael King, let's say, in the 9th round. If you're able to trade him for a 7th rounder or a 6th rounder, that's a massive win. It's not to say that you need to always get back a massive return in a trade for it to be a quote-unquote buy low or sell high. You can just eke out a round of value, 2 rounds of value, maybe 3 or 4 rounds of value, and I think that's enough. If you took Michael King 130th overall, you're trading him for the guy who was going 90th overall. I think that's still a pretty good win in a vacuum. Obviously, it's a case-by-case basis, but that's the general logic behind it. I'm still mostly looking at ADP. There are certain things that you can move around, sure, but like Francisco Lindor has been terrible to start the year. Are we going to say that he's valued as 150th ranked player right now? No, he's still a second or third rounder, right? Maybe you bump him down a round or so, but that's where the value comes from. Somebody's valuing him a round or two lower. Okay, that's where you buy. It doesn't have to be these extreme scenarios, but Michael King is an example where you might be able to sell and just get a little bit of value there. And if you can do that based on what he's done, and he's been pretty good, the line as a whole is actually not that bad for him. He's sitting at a 3.33 ERA. The whip is at 1.25, I believe, 1.22. So it's actually not that bad. It might sound a lot worse just based on the way I'm talking about it. I just worry about what we're going to see down the stretch from Michael King. So if you can sell and you can get back a good value, I would be doing that right now. Let's talk about Christopher Sanchez, one of my favorite players this year. I have a ton of shares. This was great stuff to watch yesterday. It was a bad day to be a doubter of Christopher Sanchez, and a lot of people were. A lot of people, like, it's, again, just the time of year it is, people reacting. But after his previous bad start that he had against Washington, this was 2 starts ago, against Washington, he only struck out 1 batter over 4 1/3. People dropped him all over the place because of 1 bad outing after he had debuted to a very good outing. And then he followed it up with a good start against Pittsburgh, 1 run over 6 innings, 6 strikeouts. And then another great outing yesterday against the Rockies, 10 strikeouts, no earned runs. There wasn't unearned run involved, but it doesn't matter to us for fantasy purposes. The ERA is a 0 for as far as we can see. 1 walk, 33% CSW, 17.5% swing strike rate. It came against the Rockies, but I mean, it's becoming a regular thing for him that he is putting up massive strikeout totals, keeping the runs down. 2.53 ERA with 25 strikeouts and 8 walks in 21 1/3 innings pitched. I'm a huge fan of Christopher Sanchez. He was 66% on Yahoo last night. He is still 66% this morning. I think people are just really not wanting to buy in. I don't know. I think it's the Rockies. I think maybe it's the Rockies start. Maybe it's the fact that, I don't know, the competition hasn't been terribly stiff so far, but the numbers in and of themselves are excellent. He is becoming one of the better young pitchers in baseball as far as I see it, and he's not somebody that should be sitting on any waiver wires. 66% still means that you're finding him in a lot of leagues, and even some competitive leagues, you might be finding Christopher Sanchez. So if he's out there, I would be doing what I can to pick him up, and honestly, even if you wanted to trade for him right now, based on the way that people seem to be valuing him, I don't think it'll cost you a hell of a lot. He'd be a slight buy-high option right now, where you might pay a little bit more than what you paid on draft day for him, a round or two worth of value. But I think it's worth it based on the talent level that we've seen so far from him. I think that he is really, really good. He's somebody that I'm very excited about watching going forward. Let's talk Bryce Miller. he's been really consistent to start the year, and he had another great start yesterday. Six innings, one earned run, struck out seven, which is one walk, 30% CSW. Here's the weird number, though. 6.5% swing strike rate. He had six whiffs on 91 pitches. It's a little bit strange, but if you look at what he generally does, usually it's about like a 12% swinging strike rate, 12, 13%. So I'm not going to read too much into this. He was still very effective. He didn't whiff as many batters as I thought he would, but he still ended up with seven strikeouts. It was more the command was working for him last night as opposed to really tricking guys. But one way or another, Bryce Miller has been getting the job done so far this season, and I've heard some people even say, which I don't agree with at all, but some people think he's the best pitcher in the Mariners rotation. I don't agree with it. Again, not even a little bit. I think he's the third best pitcher in the rotation, if not the fourth best pitcher in the rotation. But what he's done so far has been really, really good. 1.85 ERA, 0.82 whip through his first four starts. You got to love it. You got to love it. That first start against Boston was not ideal, but he's really settled down in the last three against Milwaukee, Chicago, and Cincinnati. So Bryce Miller, there's no pickup to be made. There's no real trade to be made. I guess if you can sell, then maybe you sell a bit high, but I'm okay to ride him out. Like, I think he's very, very good. I don't think there's any need to be worrying about massive regression or anything. I think that he is totally fine as like an SP2-3 type of player on your team. And you know, the way that injuries have gone, he might be your number one SP, and I'm honestly kind of okay with that. It's not ideal, but you could do a lot worse. Let's talk about Dalton Varsho. He's been a popular topic here recently. I had a ton of questions in the mailbag the other day about Varsho. Are we dropping Varsho? Am I done with Varsho? He's not doing anything for me. He had another couple of home runs yesterday. He's now looking at four homers, eight ribbies. He's stolen a base, 12 runs scored. Yeah, he's batting .218. That's not great. We never expected the batting average to be that great. We're probably looking at a .240 batting average best case scenario, maybe .250 is best case scenario for him. But in a down year last year, in a pretty terrible season for him, he had 20 home runs and 16 steals and was still a fantasy viable asset in most cases. I think, you know, any kind of bounce back, even if he's 5% better than last year, 10% better, which, I mean, reasonable people could expect that. Another year settled into your new environment, it's a new country for him, new team, everything. You know, you give him a year, which a lot of the times it does take people a year in a new location to really, you know, get acclimated. And I think there's a good chance we see at least like a 25 and 15 season out of him. And I think, honestly, like a 30-20 year is in the cards as well. He's already hit four home runs. He's hit him off. He hit one off a lefty yesterday, too. So it's not a handedness thing for him necessarily. I think that he can have power against both sides. It's a matter of how Toronto will play him, if they'll play him a lot against left-handed pitching. But he should be in the lineup. Toronto's lineups every day are some of the worst in baseball. They're really, really bad. John Schneider, the manager, is a full-blown incompetent with the way he manages everything. The pen, when he pulls starters, the way he sets the lineup, pinch hitters, pinch runners, it's really a mess in Toronto, and it will be a happy, happy day in my household when he eventually gets fired, which probably I would imagine would be within this year. So I don't know exactly if Varsho is going to be an every single day type of player, but I'm thinking five or six games a week you can expect him to get in the lineup. He's only 43% rostered. People really gave up on him. I think people were itching for a reason to give up on Varsho. People were very eager after like the first couple games to be like, you know what, he sucks, I'm cutting him off my team, blah, blah, blah. Like, why would you even draft him at that point? I got questions from people literally on opening weekend about Varsho and cutting him. Why would you draft him if you were so ready to cut him that quickly? You got to give guys a little bit of time. It's not always going to show up in the first weekend of the year. For most players, it doesn't. Now we have an opportunity to pick him up off the waiver wire where you're, you know, at bare minimum, 20 homers, 15 steals, and you're probably looking at a little bit more, 22 and 17, 25 and you know, 20, something like that. And roughly, you know, 25 and 20 is what we're going to see out of Varsho. I think he should not be available in any leagues as far as I see it. Some people may disagree. They don't like the low batting average or whatever, but I think that Varsho is a must-roster player wherever you're playing. Let's talk about Esteban Ruiz. I have no idea what the hell to make of this, but he has hit two home runs and stolen a base in the seven at-bats since he's been recalled again. Oakland is just going out of their way to show their dysfunction. He needed more time in the minors, so you sent him down for a week. Are we really supposed to be, you know, to believe that anything actually changed over the course of a week? Or maybe it was 2 weeks. Did anything actually change over the course of 2 weeks with Ruiz? Really? I mean, it just feels disingenuous to me. If you're looking on a per-game basis, he's been one of the best players in all of baseball. 14 at-bats, two homers, two steals, .357 batting average. The problem is he's been recalled. There's been three games since his recall. They're not playing today, so I'm not sure what the lineup will look like tomorrow, but he has sat for two of those three games. He pinch hit on April 15th, hit a home run, pinch hit again on the 16th, and then yesterday he started, led off, hit a home run, stole a base. He seems like he's got something to prove, and he does after being sent down on the opening weekend. It's humiliating. It's a humiliating way to treat a player who was, you know, arguably your best player last season. They were a god-awful team last year. He was one of the lone bright spots. You know, I really don't understand why they treated him the way they did, but I honestly don't know what they're going to do with him going forward either. I don't think he's an everyday player. Maybe he gets himself there, but the way that they've been using him indicates that he's not somebody they trust every single day. So a platoon bat in Oakland who may or may not have some more power this year, it looks like he does, but we don't know if that's going to come to fruition if he's on the bench all the time. I think it's kind of tricky to say that Ruiz is anything right now, to say he's a must-roster player, to say he's somebody that you tentatively grab, to say that he's an avoid. I don't think there's a right answer right now because we just don't know what they're going to do. He might be sitting again tomorrow and then playing again the next day, and it might be literally like an every other day platoon. Maybe he gets into the lineup every single day. I don't understand what they have to lose by playing him at this point. They are awful. They're an awful team. He is one of the better players on the team. Play him. Play him. I mean, it's really stupid. I think that they should. I don't know that they will, and that's why I'm kind of holding back on saying he is an ad. He is an absolute ad. If you're in a 15-teamer, yeah, I can get behind it. I can get behind it because there's really not that much out there on a 15-team waiver wire or an AL only. You're literally scraping the bottom of the barrel for nothing, and he was dropped in a lot of leagues. In the one league where I had him, I dropped him after he was sent down because, you know, what are we doing here? I want to be holding players in the minor leagues when they're already kind of iffy fantasy players to begin with. I just don't know what Oakland's going to do. And without knowing their plans, it's very hard for me to say you should do X, Y, or Z. I think that if you're in a deeper league, he's a tentative ad, but I wouldn't get too attached either. Like, I'm only really taking the plunge in 15-teamers because in 10s and 12s, I can find players where I'm not getting all these headaches, whether it's he's in the lineup every single day or not, whether it's the power is real or not, is he going to steal as many bases as last year? There's so many questions. Terrible ballpark, terrible lineup. I think in shallower leagues, you're probably better off just staying away. You know, tentative add, maybe, and I don't want to say like you can't add him, but I just think that there's probably better options out there. Like if you're most of you guys, I think from what you've told me, are 10 and 12 team players. I think that you can do better than Yasturi Ruiz. Let's talk Kevin Gausman. He seems to be trending in the right direction. Yesterday was not an amazing start for him, but it was definitely a lot better. Five innings, he allowed four hits and one earned run, struck out six, and walked three batters. He was a 28% CSW and a 14% swing strike rate. He was behind in March, right? We've talked about this a couple times now, that he was behind in March, that he was only really getting going like the last week of March where he had one spring appearance. So it's not overly surprising to see him get off to the slow start. I think by the time May comes around, he'll be about 100%. Maybe it'll take him a few more starts to get there, but we're seeing the strikeouts come back. We're seeing the velocity come back. He hit 98 miles an hour yesterday. That was a huge concern of mine when he pitched at Yankee Stadium a couple weeks ago. He threw a fastball in the first inning that was, yeah, he threw a couple of fastballs that were like 85, 87, 86. And it was like doom and gloom time. We're thinking it's toast. He's toast. The arm is done. But he's definitely bounced back from that. It's not anything that I'm panicking about anymore. And I think that if people are still worried, people are still selling Kevin Gausman for any kind of discount, I think you could do a lot worse than buying low on him. I've always been a little bit biased, but I was biased on Gausman before he came to Toronto. I've loved him for 5 years now. I think he's been one of the better pitchers in all of baseball. And people still are not fully bought in. And I think, honestly, a lot of it just comes down to the ramp-up period. It's not that there's actually an injury there. His arm was fatigued. It wasn't actually hurt. So that's a huge distinction. And I don't think people really saw that. Even myself, like, I was more inclined to believe that there was an injury than it was just, you know, he's like, why is his arm fatigued at the beginning of March and he hasn't been throwing? I thought that we were kind of getting lied to a little bit, or they weren't telling us all the details. But he seems okay. I think that Kevin Gausman is going to be fine. He needs a couple more starts to fully get into the swing of things at this point. All right, I can't believe I'm actually going to do this, but let's do an Anthony Rendon segment. He has multiple hits in six of his last eight games. He's been the leadoff hitter nearly every single day of the season for the Angels. And if you need help in the third base corner infield department, I can't believe I'm even saying this, but he's worth an ad. I think he is worth a speculative ad right now. He's even stealing bases. Like, I don't know what to make of this. I don't know if I believe it in the long term. Is he back to old Rendon? Absolutely not. He's never getting back to 2019 Rendon when he was, you know, a viable MVP candidate. He's not going to be there, but Could he be a decent asset for 15-team players? Absolutely. And even 12-team players, like third base has been an absolute shit show this year. It's been awful. There might be some 12-team players or even 10-team players where Anthony Rendon is worthy of a pickup. And I think, honestly, a lot of cases right now, you can give it a chance. I wouldn't be buying in with both. Like, if you're fab pickup type of player, I wouldn't be spending more than, like, at most, you know, 3% of your fab, maybe 4% of your fab on him. Because it's still a very risky proposition to invest in this kind of guy with this kind of personality. He might just decide tomorrow he doesn't want to play baseball anymore. But I think for the time being, he can be picked up, and you might end up getting yourself a little bit of a gem. Not to say he's going to be a league winner, but he might be pretty good. Again, it's Rendon. We really don't know. But for the time being, I think you could do worse at third base. We've lost a lot of options at third base recently. He's a pretty viable short-term pickup as far as I see it. Let's talk about Luis Garcia. This is Luis Garcia of the Nationals, not the injured Astros pitcher. He's been off to a great start. He's hitting .294. He's got a home run, 3 stolen bases. He's in the lineup nearly every day, and he's batting 4th or 5th. I think you should be able to get about 12 homers, 15 stolen bases out of him. I think in a 15-team league, in a deeper 12-team roto style, he is a pretty decent pickup, Luis Garcia. You know, the batting average is pretty stable, and double-digit homers and steals is very valuable as well. He's not somebody that I think you should be that interested in a shallower format, but once you start getting into those deeper 12s and 15s, he is definitely somebody that I think is worth it. Let's talk about the most added and dropped players of the day-to-day. Jack Leiter is number one. We talked about him a lot yesterday. I'm always a little bit iffy about guys making their debut. He hasn't actually thrown a pitch yet. It's probably okay against the Tigers, but I think this is probably just a situation where he's up for a start or two unless he really dominates and then they'll have their hand forced. But I wouldn't be rushing to pick up Jack Leiter at this point. Ahmed Rosario has been really good as of late, especially over the last couple of weeks. I mean, mostly that's the whole season. But he started off a little slow. Last couple of weeks have been really, really good. And he's up to a .328 batting average, 2 homers and a stolen base. He's playing most days, not every single day. And he's bouncing around the batting order, but he did bat third, yes. Actually, no, he's batting third today. Second base, shortstop, outfield eligible, only 19% rostered, and a decent track record of fantasy success. You know, you could do worse than Ahmed Rosario if you need a bit of utility help right now. Ryan O'Hearn, we talked about yesterday. He's been on one recently. They have the day off today, but he makes for a very interesting ad as well. First base and outfield eligible is really nice. The production's great. Lineup spot is great. I think Ryan O'Hearn is a nice ad. Kirby Yates, he got the win and victory were kind of crossing themselves up in my head there. He got the win last night. He pitched an inning and a third. He struck out 4 batters in an inning and a third. And now, over the last 2 appearances, we have a save and a victory over those 2 innings. It's great stuff. He is the guy in Texas at the time being. For the time being, we did say that a couple days ago, that he's likely to be the guy. It's a situation where he is the pickup for now, but at the same time, if they go to David Robertson tomorrow and then end up going back to Jose Leclerc next week, I don't think anybody is going to be terribly surprised. So I think, you know, keep your expectations in check, but if you need saves, Kirby Yates is probably a pretty solid option for right now. Ryan Nelson is being added up in a lot of leagues. He's facing San Francisco tonight. I think he's an all right streamer, but it's not anything that I'd be running to do, honestly, on the short slate. People, and a lot of people do this, even in my league, I've seen a lot of people get picked up today. There's not really that many great options. Some people in their head just want to stream every day because they want to maximize games or whatever it is, and that's good, but don't force it. Don't stream a guy just because he's available and he looks like one of the better options on the slate. It's not a good slate for streaming. My recommendation would generally be to wait until tomorrow. If you want to make a pickup of Jameson Taillon, I think that's okay because he's facing the awful Marlins tonight, but it's a season debut. I don't expect him to have a massive leash. He threw 68 pitches in his last rehab start on Friday. I don't know that they're going to push him that far, but the matchup is good enough where you could probably be excused into picking up Jameson Taillon for today. The drops, the massive drops, Griffin Jacks, number one. Get him out of your teams. He's a bum. I'm sorry, Griffin Jacks. Maybe that's too harsh, but this is really, really bad stuff we've seen from him. He got blown up yesterday. He gave up a 2-run home run in the bottom of the ninth against Cedric Mullins. And, you know, he's not the closer. He's just not the closer in Minnesota. I don't even know who the closer is, but it's not him. At best, it's some kind of committee where they haven't been getting any save opportunities. And maybe this comes back to bite me in the ass. Maybe once they start getting regular saves, Griffin Jacks becomes a guy that they turn to more. But right now, we're getting him in like the 6th, 7th, 8th inning. You know, he pitched the ninth inning of a tie game yesterday and promptly blew it. I don't have much faith in him. I don't know how much faith the Twins have in him, and I think there are much better options. If you can switch him out for Kirby Yates, I'd be happily doing it. Steven Matz is among the most dropped players. It's not something that I'd be, like, massively eager to do. He's been pretty good. He had a good start against the Dodgers, good start against Miami, and a good start against Arizona. Bad start against Oakland is never good, but I think it's probably an overreaction to read too much into it as well. Yeah, it's not a great start, but at the same time, it's one start. He's been good in the other ones, and this is the kind of the thing, right? You can say, well, he did poorly against Oakland. Well, he did well against the Dodgers. So, I mean, what, like, how are you going to reconcile that with yourself? If he had the bad start against Oakland and then followed it up with a good Dodgers start, you'd look at it completely differently. But at this time of year, it's just randomness. So I think Steven Matz is still a fine player to hold on to. There's no real need to be dropping him at this point. Garrett Whitlock was placed on the 15-day injured list with the oblique strain that we were kind of worried was going to happen. I think that he's probably still someone to hold on to for the time being. We don't know how serious it is. 15-day IL, they haven't said that it's anything too serious. They've described it as a low-grade strain. So I would hope that he can be back in the next couple weeks. Based on the role, based on how he's been doing so far this year, I would recommend holding on to Garrett Whitlock if you are able to. He's not somebody that would be an auto cut just because, well, he's on the IL now. I'd be holding on to him there. Robert Stevenson, this is a really brutal one for those who are investing in the offseason. I took a couple of shares, luckily not in draft and hold leagues, of Robert Stevenson because I thought that he was, for a time, going to be the Angels' closer. I think the fantasy community kind of tricked ourselves, though. Robert Stevenson was incredible down the stretch last year, and then everybody on Twitter, myself included, thought that he was going to be getting a job because of it, getting a closer job. So he signed with the Angels, a team that was kind of, you know, coming from a shaky closer standpoint with Carlos Estevez, and we all assumed that it was going to be Stevenson, and we all pushed him up draft boards. It was Estevez the whole time, and we kind of just lied to ourselves. And again, I'm including myself in this group too. I thought it was going to be Stevenson, but it was Estevez the whole time. And then on top of that, now there's the injuries. And he's, I think there was actually a couple injuries because there was something else. There was a shoulder, and now is it the elbow? Yeah, it's a shoulder and now the elbow. So I'm not sure if this is going to be something where he has Tommy John or what exactly the injury is because we haven't actually heard. It's just, they just said elbow injury. But yeah, Robert Stevenson is a very clear drop in all formats at this point. There's no need to be holding on to him. Eduardo Rodriguez, this one, if you missed it, was just another brutal one. Hasn't thrown a single pitch this year. He got transferred to the 60-day IL with lat tightness. This is a situation where I think you can very easily cut Eduardo Rodriguez. I don't think he's that great. I think that he's had a couple of good seasons, and every now and then he'll do fairly well for you. But there are so many problems with the injuries, with the other off-field stuff that goes on with him, that I just don't need to hold him through a two-month-plus absence here. I just don't think he's that great to justify it. If you have a free IL spot, of course, it doesn't hurt to put him there, but you're likely going to need that space sooner than later. In fact, you likely already are using it on one of the 25,000 injured pitchers out there. So I don't know that Eduardo Rodriguez is somebody that I'd necessarily think is worth holding through what is likely to be a situation where he's not back until like the All-Star break. It's just, I don't know. Maybe he's back a little sooner than that, but I don't think the talent really justifies it, especially with no IL. If you have no IL spots, then you need to get him out of here yesterday. But that'll do it for us, guys. I appreciate everybody coming in and hanging out. If you got any questions or anything, shoot them over to me at JoelRico99 or go check out Ethos Fantasy BB. I should say and, not or. You can do both. Check out Ethos Fantasy BB. All of our new content, whether it's podcasts, articles, news and notes, polls, everything baseball related, you can find over there and also at sportsethos.com. But guys, we'll be back again tomorrow to wrap up the week. Potentially we'll do Saturday show depending on the scheduling. I will see. Likely tomorrow, potentially Saturday. Keep up with that on social media. JoelRico99. But guys, next time we'll be over the course of this weekend. We'll talk to you then. Until then, take care and have a great weekend.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.